Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Now, Julie, I grew up in the American South, so I have all these memories of rural individuals with their trucks.
And their banjos.
Not their banjos. But often, okay. They're often rifles in the back of the truck, you know, mm-hmm. in the window where you could see it. Big mudded up trucks. There would be certain, iconography that would go on the truck. Sometimes it would be a beloved cartoon character, urinating onto a rival truck manufacturer's logo. But oftentimes it was an image of a deer. Because naturally, deer hunting was really mm-hmm. big in the area. It continues to be really big in rural areas throughout the United States, due in no small part to the fact that we've disrupted the predator prey relationship in the environment, and you have way too many deer, and mm-hmm. they have to be culled, and so you turn to hunters and allow them to go out there and cull the deer.
And if you're a manly man yeah. in the American South, you're going to want to show your hunting prowess by featuring those antlers wherever you can, right?
Oh, yes. So on the wall.
On the wall.
On the vehicle. Just about anywhere. On just the iconography of the antlers just ends up just about everywhere. And it's by no means purely a fascination of the American South or even American mm-hmm. culture or even modern culture. It's one of the really fascinating things about deer and antler motifs is that when you look at them and you start looking back through history, they go back pretty much all the way. They go back to at least 30,000, BCE. And you see myth cycles around the world mm-hmm. that involve them because deer and deer-like creatures, your moose, your caribou, your reindeer, et cetera. These creatures are found around the world, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere.
And they become, the associations are really potent, right? Very mm-hmm. powerful. And in fact, there is something called the Cernunnos, which is Celtic for the horned god. You find that in Celtic mythology, and he is connected with male animals, particularly the stag and rut, to give you an idea, mm-hmm. which has led him to be associated with fertility and vegetation. So you've got this sort of wild god of the forest creature who's decked out in these huge antlers. And what I like about this example in mythology is that it does really kind of carry with it not just the folklore tradition, but the sort of magical thinking that one can assume with this image. And I stumbled upon this bit of this 17th century samurai named Honda Tadakatsu, who would literally do the sort of embodied cognition with antlers fastened onto his helmet when he went onto the battlefield to intimidate, to really try to embody this idea of in this sense, a warlike creature doing battle.
Now that can be a bit dangerous, as I'll get to in a second, because you can potentially turn into a deer. That's one of the big risks.
We've seen this in Japanese samurai reenactments.
Mm-hmm.
I kid.
Now, you mentioned the masculine deer, antlered deity there, but that doesn't mean that all deer entities are necessarily masculine.
Mm-hmm.
In the deer goddess of ancient Siberia, Esther Jacobson argues that the deer is rooted in a symbolic system revolving around an animal mother. So in this myth cycle, the deer mother is kind of like a tree of life and a source of life and death. And there's a fabulous little article titled "The Deer as a Symbol" by psychologist Thomas R. Hirsch, and I'll make sure to link to that on the podcast landing page accompanying this episode. But he argues that when the deer is symbolized as a female goddess, it's definitely from a male point of view, and it gets into the male psychology, not only of gender politics of, mm-hmm. of human breeding, but also the hunt and the certain amount of guilt regarding the hunt. He says, quote, "Perhaps 60% of the deer tales I have read concern the elusiveness of the deer in the hunt and therefore express the psychology of male hunters. The hunter chases a fast and elusive deer deeper and deeper into unknown areas of a vast forest, into some strange world." And he goes on to identify 5 key motifs in deer mythology, and surprising, and this will come out more as we discuss antlers and the science of antlers, but he found little to nothing in the way of myths that were dealing with the cyclical shedding of antlers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if any listeners out there have some examples of that they would like to bring to mind, send them our way, because I'd love to read them. But anyway, Hirsch points out the following. You have antlers as protection. So you hang them on the wall. You wear them in the battle. You put them over the door. They're a magical symbol to protect you. The second is a deer as a victim or a persecuted animal. I think that's very obvious due to our hunting of the deer. Then there's deer as riches or wealth, which is key to any kind of hunting culture where you kill a deer and then you can feed your family. You can use every part of the deer in many of these traditions to provide for a family or a community. And then there's guilt over the hunt. And this is really interesting, because he mentions a few different stories. For instance, there's a Pueblo story in which the deer, elk, antelope, and eagle were all originally man-eating monsters, and the gods punished them by making them human food. So it kind of gives us an out. Like, should I feel bad about killing and eating the deer? No, because that deer used to be really awful, and the gods are punishing it, so it's cool. A similar one you'll find in the Siberian traditions, which say that the elk once had 6 legs and lived in the sky, and it got so conceited that the god Numi had its 2 back legs cut off and then threw it down to earth, and then it's okay to eat it. And you see various tales of this kind. Other ones include ideas that the deer is born again after you kill it, or the deer grants the hunter permission to kill it.
Which, again, all comes back to this guilt idea over it, right? And these sort of very difficult negotiations we make psychologically when we talk about our food sources, which we've talked about before in the book Some We Love, Some We Hate,
yes.
Some We Eat.
We did a podcast episode called Don't Eat the Panda.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll include a link to that on the landing page for this episode. But if you want, go back, listen to that, because we get really deep into these discussions of how we feel about the animals we consume.
And the semantic distancing with words.
Yes. Finally, the final motif that he points out, deer as a guide to another world. Now, deer, if you've encountered them, you can attest to this. They're elusive, they're light-footed, they're speedy, they flee into the deep forest, and if you're hunting them, this could draw you in after them into deeper woods, into areas that resonate with supernatural ideas. So you have like the deer people of Scottish myth. You have various accounts where deer are take the form of alluring women, and they're kind of like sirens leading you onto destruction. And then we have multiple tales where you have to deal with the danger of becoming a deer. There's a story of a 4th century Chinese hunter who fell and became a stag and then ran away, and his son gave up hunting. In European myth cycles, there's the character Brutuchen, who was turned into a roe or a little stag because he drank from a forbidden pool. You have animal transformations throughout Native American tribes, people's belief systems, parts of rituals where you're donning the hides of deer, you're using the antlers of deer, and you run the risk of catching deer fever, in which the hunter becomes a deer and flees into the forest and never comes back again. And one of my favorites, and I have a blog post about this, is going to come out because you see it as a motif in art. You have the Greek hunter Ascetian, who comes upon the goddess Diana bathing naked in a pool. And so this is, of course, a dangerous thing to do, to glimpse a god or a goddess naked. And so she's furious, and she turns him into a stag so that he can never tell anybody about what he saw. So then he runs off, and he's torn apart by his own hunting dogs. He's unable to stop them because by turning him into a deer, she took away his voice. So he couldn't tell anybody about seeing her naked, but he also couldn't call off his own dogs.
So. I'm familiar with that just from an episode of Duck Dynasty. They were just sitting around talking about all this. No.
No, okay.
I wish they were. That would be
Well, see, they're duck people, so they probably have a whole different set of legends about potentially turning into a duck.
But they're hunters at the core. So yeah. If they're duck people, they're deer people. Now, one of the things I was thinking about, too, is Pan with his flute leading people away. You know, the horned Pan. We all have some sort of familiarity with this trope of deer and antlers and this sort of mystical creature. And if you think that this isn't translated into some sort of industrial complex, well, you're wrong, because it turns out that antlers are huge. It's a huge commodity. New Zealand is the world's largest producer of deer antler, followed closely by Australia and Canada, both increasingly more so. And Korea is probably the world's largest user of antlers, with an appetite for all sorts of things antler.
And indeed, we've been using antlers for ages and ages, because essentially you have, if you catch them in time, you have this hardened bone structure that is sharpened, that's smooth.
Nice tool.
Yeah, nice. Seems to lend itself well to use. And indeed, there was a 500,000-year-old antler hammer found at Eartham Pit in Boxgrove, England. And this would have been used by an extinct species of Homo heidelbergensis, the first humans to colonize Europe. And then, also of interest, 2010, an excavation in Motala, Sweden, a carved bone was unearthed at a Mesolithic site that's rich in ancient artifacts from about 4,000 to 6,000 BCE. And what they found was, it could have been just a mere tool with a phallic theme to it, but one end definitely looks like a penis. And so there's some discussions that it could have been the world's first known sex toy. So,
yeah, according to Clara Moskowitz, writing for Live Science, the dildo-like object is about 4 inches, that's 10.5 centimeters long, and about 0.8 inches in diameter, 2 centimeters. And if you look at the picture, it's very uncanny.
Yeah, it's pretty unmistakable, and they point out it would have been unmistakable at the time. It's not like somebody made this tool and then other tribes people just snickered at him at the accidental resemblance. So
right, and some people say, well, maybe it was just something that was symbolic, used in fertility rites or something, not necessarily used as a sex aid, but we'll probably never know.
Yeah, I mean, needless to say, phallic motifs are found just about everywhere you look, and they've been there throughout human history, and even perhaps before human history. So it doesn't take a huge stretch of the imagination to think about it in that light. Now, it's interesting to note, and this was pointed out in a 1973 edition of Nature, that the anthropologist, when studying excavated bone remains, often finds it difficult to distinguish specimens worked by hominids and those that have been, say, gnawed on by carnivores, hungry rodents, but also herbivores, such as a Norwegian reindeer or the Scottish red deer. According to a then anthropologist at the British Museum, these gnawed bones and antlers can resemble artifacts worked by human hands and have sometimes been mistaken for them. So even as we've used antlers in our construction of tools since time out of mind, it's easy to make the mistake by looking at gnawed remnants and think that those were worked by human hands.
All right, with all that being said, let's look at the basics of antlers because it's pretty amazing. They are found on the heads of male members of the deer family, with the exception of reindeers, in which female reindeers also have a set of antlers. They're made of bone, and they sprout from the pedicle, which is a bony growth located just above the skull.
Yeah, and it's worth stressing again that these are this is genuine bone we're talking about here. Antelope, sheep, goats, creatures of this nature, they have horns rather than antlers, and the difference here is that horns are made of keratin, the material you'll find in your fingernails or in the hair or in claws, and they're not routinely shed in this manner.
Yeah, right. If you have a horn, if you're sporting a horn and it breaks off, too bad.
Yeah.
It's not going to grow back. But if you have antlers, they will grow back, and we'll discuss a little bit more about that. Hardened antlers are made up of roughly 45% protein, 22% calcium, 11% phosphorus, and 1% fat. They also contain magnesium, sodium, aluminum, potassium, copper, manganese, and zinc. And the chemical composition of antlers varies with the location and can be affected by environmental factors like soil characteristics and the amount of rainfall during the antler growth cycle. And that's what I think is so cool about these antlers, is they really respond to the environment.
Yeah, genetics, age, and diet are the three key factors in antler growth. And yeah, scientists have spent a lot of time just trying to figure out exactly, you know, how everything comes together in the formation of these antlers, indeed what the antlers are for, what purpose they have, why in most species the males have antlers and the females don't, and then in the case of reindeer and caribou, why do the females have antlers? That throws off a lot of the theories, and you have to reanalyze the situation.
Now, one of the most outstanding examples of antlers is the Irish elk. It's known as the giant deer, Megalosaurus gigantus. Of course, it's extinct now. But analysis of its bones and teeth by scientists who are based in Britain and Russia showed the huge herbivore survived until about 5,000 BC. It stood about 7 feet tall, 2.1 meters at the shoulder. And the adult males had massive antlers that spanned about 12 feet across. That's 3.7 meters. And they weighed up to 88 pounds or 40 kilos.
That's quite a rack.
Nice! I was wondering if that would get worked in. So what would be the purpose of having such a huge rack?
Well, that's one of the questions that we've struggled with over time. Why do they actually have these antlers? And there are actually several key theories that have been thrown around. And a lot of them are kind of related, and some of the additional theories kind of use one or two of these in making their final argument.
And there's no definitive answer here, we should say.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising. It's easy to take for granted that antlers, surely we know why they work, and it at a surface level, it's easy to just go along with it with any one of these theories. But the first one, signal of male quality. So this one, of course, just comes down to breeding, just comes down to acquiring a mate, sending a message to a potential mate, hey, look at me, I'm healthy, I got the genetics, I am clearly the deer or moose or what have you that you should mate with.
So, yeah, I mean, this is basically transmitting, like, I have a really healthy diet, I spend a lot of time out in the sun, not playing video games, you should choose me.
Now, another theory is that these are weapons used to fight other males. And it's kind of funny to refer to this as a theory, since we do see plenty of deer and similar animals fighting with each other with their antlers. But the idea here is that breeding season starts, male deer need to use their antlers to fight and establish dominance with other males. And indeed, they, like I say, they do use them for this purpose.
Yeah, and some of them don't even engage in combat. So the idea here is that a glorious display of antlers may be enough for another deer to stand down. So yeah, I mean, they may spar. And if they do, well, hey, it kind of shows like that one is the dominant one, and they should stand down, or maybe they just look at each other and say, forget it.
So it's essentially your classic, that's not a knife, this is a knife scenario.
Or as I like to think of, you just referenced Crocodile Dundee, but I like to think of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yes.
When Harrison Ford is met with an aggressor with a knife, and then he just pulls out a gun.
Oh,
the guy's
yeah.
like, forget it.
Yeah, the guy like pulls out this big knife or almost like a scimitar or something.
Yeah.
He's just swirling it around,
That's
doing
right.
this impressive display, and then Ford just shoots him and makes short work of him.
Yeah.
Now, another theory is that this is a display dominant size, and this kind of ties into what we've already discussed. The size of the antlers of the deer displays age-related dominance between males without the males actually having to fight. So we touched on that already. And then another theory is defense against predators. And this is the basic idea that you grow those antlers as much, or if not exclusively, because you have to defend yourself against predators. You, as an antler-bearing species, you are a prey animal, and things are out to get you. So yeah, it's easy to think of these antlers as essentially like the big, gaudy gold watch that an individual is wearing at the beach, and that sends the message, hey, I got plenty of resources, I'm clearly the guy you need to hang out with and breed with. But then what do we do, what do we think when we look at female reindeer, female caribou, that are sporting antlers as well? Well, there's an interesting article on this from Smithsonian.com. This is from Why Do Some Females Have Horns by Gary Layden. And he points out there's been a lot of research that's gone into this question, because again, it kind of becomes pivotal to our whole question about antlers in general,
mm-hmm.
because here are these females running around with them. What does it mean? Points out that in tiny monogamous deer and antelope populations, the females and the males tend to look more alike. There's less difference. They're pair bonded. They have basic horns or antlers to defend against predators. Mm-hmm. Nothing fancy. Meanwhile, when you look to the larger species, that's where you see more of this male competition and for the females, and you see this difference, this antlered or horned difference between the males and the females.
Well, so to me, that gets more to the question of sexual selection, because mm-hmm. then you start to think about peacocks and the male peacocks and their glorious displays. Like the bigger
right.
the display, the more they seem like they would be the ones to mate with, or at least that's the idea. And particularly when you consider that hole in logic with antlers and protection, like if that's what they're there for, it doesn't make sense, because then all deer, no matter, you know, if you're talking about a moose or, you know, a roe deer, all of them would have a set of antlers to protect themselves with.
Yeah, indeed. Two of the theories out there regarding why have antlers, why have horns, if you're a female in the species. One of these is a hypothesis proposed by Richard Estes, who works with wildebeest in East Africa, and he suggests that horned or antlered females benefit by confusing adult males as to who the young males in the group are. So the strategy here would be to keep the young males in the group longer so they can grow bigger before heading out on their own.
Hmm.
Now, a more recent theory proposed by Ted Stankiewicz of the University of Massachusetts and Tim Caro of the University of California at Davis argues that females can't really hide in protective cover, and that those who must defend a feeding territory are more likely to have horns or antlers than those who live in a protective habitat or don't defend a territory. So the argument here is we see females with antlers among caribou and reindeer because they're living out in the open, out to clear visibility. They can't just depend on running and hiding, so mm-hmm. they would need those antlers in a sense for protection, but also just to not stand out from the antlered and protective male members of the society.
Yeah, I think there's just so many different factors that play into this. And so the jury's out, but I guess we could all probably agree that they likely serve as both armament and ornament.
Yeah, and then there are even additional theories. Like there's the theory that reindeer all have the antlers because they use their antlers as tools to clear away snow
mm-hmm.
when they're feeding.
Snow plowing.
Yeah. But then, for instance, what do you think then when you look at the moose? Because there's an argument that in moose, the antlers may act as a large hearing aid. And
that makes sense because they have more of a surface area,
it
right?
It makes sense, yeah. But then why do only male moose have those antlers?
Oh, because they never listen.
So hopefully that relays something of the mystery surrounding the antler and why we're still studying antlers and trying to figure out exactly why they evolved and how they function for these different deer and deer-like creatures.
Indeed. And now we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we are going to talk about how antlers are exquisitely sensitive to their environment.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O Allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
All right, we're back. We're discussing antlers. We've talked about antlers and their cultural impact on humans and our attempts to understand them and their owners from sort of a supernatural standpoint. We've talked about our scientific attempts to understand what antlers are and why they form and what function they serve. Now we're going to discuss the role that the environment plays in the formation of antlers and indeed the cyclical nature of antler growth and shedding.
Which is all dependent on the amount of light that they are exposed to. And I'm really enjoying the fact that this is coming up again because we've been talking about light and dark and how it is so much the underpinnings of each species' existence. Well, here again is another great example because there's something called the photoperiod. And what we're talking about is an interval in a 24-hour period during which a plant or an animal is exposed to light.
And, of course, periods of sunlight alter during the course of a year. It's seasonally dependent, and there's a seasonal cycle to what the deer are doing, to their breeding cycle. And as we've discussed, most of the theories with the antlers seem to revolve around the use of antlers as a display, as a weapon in the acquiring of mates.
So if you look at this photo period, then, you know, it's pretty obvious that in the summer you have longer days, you have more sunlight, and mm-hmm. bucks produce higher levels of testosterone, which in turn trigger antler development. So antlers start as cartilage growing from bases, those bases that we called out earlier called pedicles. and a fuzzy skin known as velvet, which is really rich in blood vessels and it's sensitive to the touch. It supplies the growing antlers with essential nutrients. Now, I'm not going to call it an umbilical cord, but it's doing the same sort of job here, essentially.
Yeah, just as a side note to touch on the testosterone issue, if a deer is castrated either on purpose or just by accident in the course of its life, it will stop this cycle of growth. It will grow one pair of misshapen antlers and then keep those for the rest of its life.
Now, if it's not castrated, which out in the wild, assuming that's not going to happen, and as the amount of daylight dwindles later in summer, the bucks go through another testosterone increase, and that triggers a mineralization and hardening of the antlers. And then you get into fall, and you have the bucks rubbing their antlers on vegetation to remove the velvet, and that reveals these bony antlers, and that carries them through fall and winter. And then after the breeding season, you have a drop in a buck's testosterone level, and that triggers the antlers to release from their pedicles. And then within days, you have a formation of a scab-like material over those pedicles. And the process starts anew with the development of these new growth cells for the antlers.
So obviously, if you're going to go out in the woods and look for antlers, winter is the time to do it. Because shed antlers are often difficult to find, really, because they have this high protein content and an abundance of calcium phosphate. So rodents are quick to consume them. So if you do find antlers in the wild, snatch them up and consider yourself lucky. Or if you're a rodent, have a bite.
Although, do you consider that it is someone's habitat, right?
Yes.
That rodent's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you are interfering with the habitat. But then you can argue that, well, we already unbalanced the habitat, so there should be plenty of antlers out there. So maybe we're just doing our part to keep the rodents thin. I don't know.
Now, the significance of the photo period is really huge. In controlled lab experiments, bucks have been capable of producing multiple sets of antlers in a single year, as well as retaining a single set of antlers for several years just by altering the amount of light that they're exposed to.
Wow. See, that's good information, because I found myself wondering when I was reading about this. I was like, what if you took a deer from North America and you put it on a plane, booked it a flight all the way to Australia? What happens? You know, because you're shifting the seasons, you're shifting the light. And obviously, yeah, you change the amount of light the deer is getting, and then you end up hacking into that antler cycle. So there you go.
Indeed.
Now, I do want to point out that antler is bone, but it is particularly tough bone. Because obviously, our own bones break when they encounter a lot of force. And when you see two moose or caribou or deer going at it with their antlers, it's almost kind of shocking that you're not seeing antlers just splinter and break all over the place. Well, there's a 2009 study from John Curry at the University of York in the UK. And he was looking at the structure of the antlers, how much wear and tear they can take. And he found that hardened antlers, that's the antlers that they have in fall for the breeding season, that they are 2.4 times tougher than normal wet bone. And he also found that they could survive impacts 6 times greater than impacts that shatter a wet femur.
That's why the samurai warrior wore them on his helmet, right?
Yeah, just one more reason to embody that creature and risk deer madness before you go into battle.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Now, speaking of Eastern traditions with antlers, you can do more than just wear them on your helmet. You can, of course, grind them up and use them in your medicine. Deer antler has been a common ingredient in Chinese tonic preparations for some time, dating back at least 2,000 years. And in Chinese traditional medicine, it's thought to nourish the yin, tonify the kidney, invigorate the spleen, strengthen bones and muscles, and promote blood flow. And it's still used in Chinese traditional medicine today to treat a number of ailments, including mammary hyperplasia, malignant sores, children's mumps, etc.
Now, in the West, some researchers are very interested in the antlers because of the rapid growth of antlers. So at the height, we're talking about an eighth of an inch a day, which is pretty incredible. So they're interested because they're thinking about the sort of regenerative properties that the cells possess. They're also looking to antlers as treatments for maladies like osteoarthritis.
Yeah, in fact, a 2012 study from the University of Castilla-La Mancha in Spain suggests that the origin of osteoporosis could be directly linked to a lack of minerals essential to calcium absorption, namely manganese, rather than a lack of calcium. And this was all based on their studies of antlers. And this is because previous antler studies had shown that manganese is necessary for calcium absorption. So this hypothesis all boils around the idea that when the human body absorbs less manganese or when it is sent from the skeleton to other organs that require it, such as the brain, the calcium that's extracted at the same time is then not properly absorbed and is excreted in the urine.
Which is really important, right? Because
yeah.
A lot of people who are trying to avoid osteoporosis are trying to really take a lot of calcium supplements or add it to their diet with foods. But if you don't have the manganese to help facilitate absorption, well, then it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, any kind of study that is looking into the formation of bone or the weakening of bone, and antlers provide a very interesting and very extreme model to study.
Now, a team of researchers in Seoul, Korea, reported finding evidence that deer antlers contain multipotent stem cells that could be useful for tissue regeneration in veterinary medicine. They specifically noted that injury to wild animals, including deer themselves, could be treated using deer antler-derived cells. And they pointed out that studies involving the use of horse stem cells have found clinical application of equine-derived stem cells. So in other words, perhaps this could make its way to humans as well.
Speaking of consumption by humans, some of you may be familiar with deer velvet. Common name of a product made from growing antlers of deer during that stage when they're covered in that soft, velvety substance we were discussing earlier. And you will find it in a number of non-FDA-approved and varying degrees of suspicious products to help you heal after an injury, to help you in your training, etc.
Yeah, deer velvet contains a growth hormone called insulin-like growth factor 1, or IGF-1. And as you say, it's an unproven performance enhancer often used by athletes who think that it could help heal cartilage and tendon injuries more quickly and boost their strength and endurance.
Yeah, it's a growth hormone, and these can be useful for, you know, for instance, young people that have, you know, stunted growth. Mm-hmm. It can be people who suffer from dwarfism related to factors of that, or and even in the healing of cartilage and tendon injuries. But it's generally not something that gets recommended for people who are just training and wanting to bulk up, because there can be a number of adverse side effects, including the tendons becoming too tight and easy to break, or it can even disrupt the way that the body metabolizes fats and sugar. So it can throw things out of whack.
Indeed it can. So don't take that deer antler supplement. It's just, I mean, you're trying to hack into your own body and do that is just not a good idea.
Indeed.
Now, recently a hunter in Slovenia brought down a roe deer with what appeared to be a unicorn horn.
Ah, a single horn, a single antler-like formation atop its head instead mm-hmm. of two.
Yeah.
And in a way, like the unicorn is very much in that area of the mystical deer. You know, it's the mystical forest animal that's holy and elusive. And so.
Well, you've seen that Tom Cruise documentary, Legend, right?
Yes. Yeah, I was just thinking about that the other day when I saw this article, because there's a whole goblins are hunting the unicorn before the devil, you know, your typical goblin, devil, unicorn plot.
Sure.
But in this case, this was not an actual unicorn. This was, a deer with two antlers that were grown together. And this was just a really rare form of antler deformity. But there are a number of antler deformities that can take place due to, injury to the pedicle, injury to the animal itself, mm-hmm. dietary, genetic aspects, castration that we mentioned earlier. So you do see a lot of malformation of antlers out there. In deer, moose, caribou, reindeer populations. And this just was an extreme example of that.
It was because the pedicles grew together. So mm-hmm. it appeared to be just like a single unicorn-like protrusion.
I thought it was interesting that the article that we're looking at, they pointed out that the hunter probably was not able to identify it as having a single antler as opposed to two mm-hmm. before he shot it. Because instantly people would say, why did you kill the unicorn? Why not bring this in? And indeed, he might have been kicking himself because you could have taken this thing on the road, right?
And then he came up with some sort of folkloric rationalization for it, right?
Yeah.
It made me follow it into the forest.
There you go, into the deeper woods. And you had no choice but to kill it lest it draw you in and you see a naked goddess and then you get turned into a deer and eaten by hounds.
And it's all over.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cycle of life. Cycle of life. All right, so there you have it, the mystery of the antler. Just a crash course in the cultural importance of deer and antlers, the science of antlers, what we know, what questions still remain, and we'd love to hear from anyone out there who has some added bits that they've come across, or just their own experience with the elusive and mystical deer.
Might I insert a slight diversion? Because okay. I cannot, you know how you're sitting here thinking and you're podcasting and you have like the one nagging thought. And I was thinking a lot of this, these antlers bring up again these tropes of masculinity and so forth. And then I thought about a picture that a Swedish woman recently showed me that seems to be an American thing in which instead of like fastening antlers to your car, say, which I've seen before,
uh-huh.
people are putting what looks to be, iron castings of testicles hanging from the front of their car. Do you know of this?
Oh yes. Are you being facetious?
It took a Swedish woman. I know to show me. I was like, wait, are you sure this is an American?
Oh, I almost mentioned them earlier. I believe they're called truck nuts.
And
yeah, they've been around for a while. I think they started showing up a few years back. And it indeed is about making your truck more masculine, I guess, by putting testicles on it. I don't pretend to understand it, but it seems to be very much composed of the same energy as putting these protective, deer motifs on your vehicle.
Yeah, I thought, wow, like gun racks aren't enough and antlers aren't enough, but you gotta have truck nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it always seemed a little bit weird to me too, because it's like they're exposed right there on the truck. Like, even on the human body, it's kind of ridiculous. And if you're just parking your truck at Walmart and it has its testicles hanging out, you're just asking for somebody to kick your truck in the balls or to do something worse to the balls. I mean,
yeah, I want to weave this into some sort of vulnerability thing, like Brené Brown's talk on vulnerability and how important this is. So maybe it's a way of saying, yes, I'm vulnerable sometimes.
Yeah.
These are my nuts.
Because if they castrate your truck, then the antlers are going to grow weird, as we've discussed. And nobody
nice,
wants that.
Nicely done. You wrap that up. Okay. Guys, if you want to find more out about us, you can visit stufftoblowyourmind.com.
It's where you'll find all the podcast episodes, all the videos, all the blog posts, links to social media accounts that we maintain, all that good stuff.
And if you have any thoughts you want to send our way, please do. And you can do so by sending an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.